Captain's log, stardate 2821.5. En route to Machus 3 with a cargo of medical supplies. Our course leads us past Murasaki 312, a quasar-like formation, vague, undefined. Priceless opportunity for scientific investigation. On board is Galactic High Commissioner Ferris, overseeing the delivery of the medicines to Machus 3. Captain to shuttlecraft Galileo. Stand by, Mr. Spock.
Ignoring the man who's just appeared on the bridge, Captain Kirk checks the crew at their consoles.
I remind you, Captain, I'm entirely opposed to this delay. Your mission is to get those emergency medical supplies to Machus 3 in time for their transfer to the new Paris colonies.
No problem, Commissioner. And may I remind you that I have standing orders to investigate all quasars and quasar-like phenomena wherever they may be encountered. Besides, it's 3 days to Marcus. And the rendezvous doesn't take place for 5.
I don't like to take chances. The plague is out of control on New Paris. We must get those drugs there on time.
No problem.
Kirk steps down from the gallery.
Captain to Galileo. All systems cleared for takeoff.
On the hangar deck, the small shuttlecraft slowly revolves on its launch pad. Inside, Spock settles himself into the pilot's seat and checks the instrumentation.
Power up. All instruments activated. All readings normal. All go.
Launch shuttlecraft.
The hangar doors open and the shuttle, a boxy craft not much bigger than a small bus, leaves the Enterprise. Inside, the 7-strong party includes Scotty and McCoy. A young, dark-haired female yeoman runs checks at her station.
Readings normal. Acceleration normal. Phase 1 separation normal.
Position?
3.7. Sir,
make up your mind, please, Mr. Latimer.
Sir, this indicator's gone crazy.
That's to be expected, Mr. Spock. Quasars are extremely disruptive. Just how much, we don't know.
Considerably, Mr. Bulmer.
Mr. Spock, radiation is increasing.
The craft begins to rock.
Stop forward momentum, Mr. Latimer.
Latimer hits a switch at the co-pilot's station.
I can't, sir. Nothing happens.
Galileo to Enterprise. Galileo to Enterprise. Come in, please.
I like interference, Mr. Spock.
Being drawn right into it.
Galileo to Enterprise. Galileo to Enterprise. We are out of control, being pulled directly into the heart of Murasaki 312. Being hit by violent radiation on outer hull. Course 3.25.
Anything at all?
Nothing clear, Captain. Just a few words about being pulled off course.
Try and get me a fix on the Galileo.
Scanners are blank, Captain. We're getting a mass of readings I've never seen before. Nothing makes sense.
Kirk goes to Spock's computer station.
Negative ionic concentration, 1.64 times 10 to the 9th power meters. Radiation wavelength, 370 angstroms. Harmonics upwards along entire spectrum.
What is it, Captain?
That thing out there has ionized its complete sector. None of our instruments worked. At least 4 complete solar systems in the immediate vicinity. And out there, somewhere, a 24-foot shuttlecraft, off course, out of control. Finding a needle in a haystack would be child's play.
Commissioner Ferris looks on unsympathetically.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry. Starring William Shatner, also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock. the Galileo 7.
Captain's log, stardate 2821.7. The electromagnetic phenomena known as Murasaki 312 whirls like some angry blight in space, a depressive reminder that seven of our shipmates still have not been heard from. Equally bad, the effect has rendered our normal searching systems useless. Without them, we are blind and almost helpless.
Commissioner Ferris.
I was opposed to this from the very beginning. Our flight to Marcus 3 is of the very highest priority.
I'm aware of that, Commissioner. At the same time, I have certain scientific duties I must perform, and investigating the Murasaki effect is one of them.
Yes, but you've lost your crew.
We have 2 days to find them.
2 days? In all that? 2 days?
What would you have me do? Turn around and leave them there?
You shouldn't have sent them out in the first place.
Captain, there's one planet in this solar system capable of sustaining human life. It's Type M. Oxygen, nitrogen, and it's listed as Taurus 2. It's unexplored. As far as we can determine with our equipment malfunction, it's just about dead center of the Murasaki effect.
Kirk looks at the green cloud on the screen.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Sulik. Yes, sir. Set course for Taurus 2. Aye, aye, sir.
The shuttle is on a rocky planet surface. Inside the craft, the seven strong crew have been thrown forward in their seats or onto the floor, stunned by the impact. McCoy shakes his head to clear it and looks across at a lieutenant, Gaetano, who's nursing his wrist. Scotty goes over to Spock and looks at the damaged control panel.
You all right?
Yeah.
Scotty? Bomber?
Now that's what I call a ride.
Yeoman?
It's got a little bump on the head. Thank you.
What happened?
I can't be sure. But I'd say that the magnetic potential of the effect was...
Thank you.
Was such that as we gathered speed, it was multiplied geometrically. And we were simply shot into the center of the effect. Well, like a projectile.
I'd say your evaluation is reasonable, Mr. Bomber.
What a mess.
Picturesque descriptions will not mend broken circuits, Mr. Scott. I think you'll find your work is cut out for you.
Galileo to Enterprise. Galileo to Enterprise, come in, please.
You don't really expect to get an answer, do you?
I expect nothing, Mr. Scott. It is merely logical to try all the alternatives.
Dr. McCoy, a reading on the atmosphere, please.
Partial pressure of oxygen, 70 millimeters of mercury. Nitrogen, 140. Breathable, if you're not running in competition.
Just the facts, Doctor.
Traces of argon, neon, krypton, all in acceptable quantities. However, I wouldn't recommend this place as a summer resort.
Thank you for your opinion. It will be duly noted. You're recording this, Yeoman?
Of course, Mr. Scott.
All right. Mr. Scott, if you'll make a survey of damage, please.
Logical.
Gentlemen, I think we should move outside and make room for Mr. Scott to do his work. Mr. Latimer, Mr. Gaetano, you'll arm yourselves. Scout out the area, keeping in visual contact with the ship.
Aye, aye, sir.
Gaetano takes a phaser and belt for himself and Latimer, and they leave the shuttle. McCoy comes over to Spock.
What do you think our chances are of contacting the Enterprise?
Under present conditions, extremely poor.
But they'll be looking for us.
If the ionization effect is as widespread as I believe it is, Doctor, they'll be searching for us without instrumentation, by visual contact only. On those terms, this is a very large planet.
Then you don't think they'll find us?
Not as long as we're grounded. We may be here for a very long time, Doctor.
On board the Enterprise, Commissioner Ferris keeps a haughty watch on the bridge crew.
Nothing happened.
Mr. Sulu.
Yes, Captain.
Anything on your scanners?
Totally inoperative, sir. No readings at all.
Have you tried tying into the auxiliary power?
Yes, sir. No change.
Transport room. This is the captain speaking. Are the transporters beaming up yet?
Not 100%, Captain. We beamed down some inert material, but it came back in dissociated condition. We wouldn't dare try it with people.
Thank you. This is the captain speaking. Flight deck, prepare Columbus for immediate exit. For a search of the planet's surface. Correlate coordinates with Mr. Sulu. Thank you. Anything, Laura?
All wavelengths dominated by ionization effects, sir. Transmission is blocked, reception impossible.
Well, Captain,
We have until 2823.8 to continue the search, Commissioner.
You don't really think you'll have any luck, do you?
Look, these people are my friends and my shipmates. I intend to continue the ship's search for them until the last possible moment.
Very well, Captain. But not one second beyond that moment. Is that clear? If it isn't, I suggest you look at Book 19, Section 433, Paragraph 12.
I'm familiar with the regulations, Commissioner. I know all about your authority. Launch shuttlecraft Columbus.
As the Commissioner steps into the lift, the second shuttlecraft leaves the hangar deck. On the planet's surface, Spock squats behind one of the shuttlecraft's two small engine pods. McCoy comes out to him.
Well, I can't say much for the circumstances, but at least it's your big chance.
My big chance? For what, Doctor?
Command. Oh, I know you, Mr. Spock. You've never voiced it, but you've always thought that logic was the best basis on which to build command. Am I right?
I am a logical man, Doctor.
Well, it'll take more than logic to get us out of this.
Perhaps, Doctor, but I know of no better way to begin. I realize that command does have its fascinations, even under circumstances such as these. But I neither enjoy the idea of command, nor am I frightened of it. It simply exists. And I will do whatever logically needs to be done. Excuse me.
Spock goes back into the shuttle. McCoy follows, checking the readings on his tricorder. Inside, Scotty is lying on his back, his head up beneath the control console at the front of the craft. Lieutenant Bomer and Yeoman Mears are talking quietly.
Very bad, Mr. Spock.
In what way?
We've lost a great deal of fuel. We have no chance at all to reach escape velocity. And if we ever hope to make orbit, we'll have to lighten our load by at least 500 pounds.
The weight of three grown men.
You could put it that way.
Or the equivalent weight in equipment.
Dr. McCoy, with very few exceptions, we use virtually every piece of equipment aboard this craft in attaining orbit. There's very little excess weight, except among the passengers.
You mean three of us must stay behind?
Unless the situation changes radically, yes.
And who's to choose?
As commanding officer, the choice will be mine.
You wouldn't be interested in drawing lots.
A very quaint idea, Mr. Bomer, but I do believe I'm better qualified to make the selection than any random drawing of lots.
All right, Mr. Spock. Who?
My choice will be a logical one, arrived at through logical means.
Mr. Spock, life and death are seldom logical.
But attaining a desired goal always is, Doctor. Now, gentlemen, I suggest we move outside to make a further examination of the hull in the event we've overlooked any minor damage.
He goes.
If any minor damage was overlooked, it was when they put his head together.
Not his head, Mr. Bomer. His heart. His heart.
Away from the shuttle, Latimer and Gaetano, creeping along a rocky ledge, hunker down, trying to locate the strange noises coming through the mist. Latimer looks over at his dark-haired companion.
What is it?
I don't know. It's from up there.
Latimer peers ahead, but then looks back over his shoulder. Gaetano looks too.
No, it's from back there.
They turn this way and that, becoming increasingly jittery.
It's everywhere. It's all around us.
Let's get out of here.
Latimer moves off, leading the way through the rising vapors. He crawls to the top of a rocky knoll and peers down over the other side, but still nothing comes into view. Latimer stands up on top of the rock for a better view. Somewhere behind him, a huge, furry figure raises a stone-tipped spear. Latimer falls into the gully below, back at the shuttle.
Come on, Bomer.
Gaetano scrambles down to Latimer's body, firing his phaser up at the rocks above. Standing guard over Latimer's corpse, he fires his phaser this way and that into the enveloping mist.
What was it?
Something huge, terrible. Up there, I think I hit it.
Spock goes to look, leaving Gaetano with Bomer.
Did you see what it was?
Vaguely. It was like a giant ape.
Poor Latimer.
Well, at least it was quick for him.
We'll get off all right.
Nothing there.
I tell you, there was.
I don't doubt your word.
Oh, there must be something. I swear I hit it.
Spock looks at the spear.
Folsom Point.
Sir?
This. Remarkable resemblance to the Folsom Point discovered 1925 Old World Calendar. New Mexico, North America. Bit more crude about the shaft, I believe. Not very efficient.
Not very efficient? Is that all you have to say?
Am I an error, Mr. Bowman?
You? Error? Impossible.
Then what, Mr. Bowman?
There's a man lying there dead. And you talk about stone spears. What about Latimer?
My concern for the dead will not bring him back to life, Mr. Bowman.
Mr. Spock, in the interest of efficiency, you don't think we should leave his body here?
Bringing him back to the ship should not interfere with our repair efforts. If you need assistance, I'll...
We'll do it. Give me a hand with Latimer, will you?
With a disgusted, hostile look at Spock, Gaetano goes over to the body. Bowman comes up to join him, and together they pick Latimer up by the legs and beneath the arms. Spock goes on ahead, back to the shuttle.
Captain's log, stardate 2822.3. We continue to search, but I find it more difficult each moment to ward off a sense of utter futility and great loss.
Captain, the Columbus has returned from searching quadrant 779X by 534M. Results negative.
Have them proceed to the next quadrant. Any word from engineering on our sensors?
They're working on them, sir. Still inoperable.
What about the transporters?
They're still reported unsafe.
Thank you, Lieutenant.
Captain.
Yes, Commissioner.
I don't relish the thought of abandoning your crewmen out there. However, I must remind you...
I haven't forgotten, Commissioner.
You're running out of time.
I haven't forgotten that, Commissioner. This is the captain. Try using overload power on the transporters. We've got to get them working.
Aye, aye, Captain.
Uhura, order the Columbus to open its course 2 degrees on every lap from now on.
But, Captain, 2 degrees means you'll be overlooking more than a dozen terrestrial miles on each search loop.
Also means we have a fighting chance to cover the majority of the planet's surface. Mind your helm, Mr. Sulu.
Yes, sir.
The commissioner steps into the lift.
24 more hours, Captain.
On board the shuttle, Scotty is working on the fuel system through a hatch in the floor.
Perhaps if you were to channel the second auxiliary tank through the primary intake valve.
It's too delicate. It may not be able to take the pressure as it is.
This should save us at least 50 pounds, Mr. Spock.
Excellent, Doctor.
We should be able to scrape up another 100 pounds.
Which would still leave us at least 150 pounds overweight.
I can't believe you're serious about leaving someone behind. Now, whatever it is out there that we...
It is more rational to sacrifice one life than six, Doctor.
I'm not talking about rationality.
You might be wise to start.
Bowman leans in through the door.
Mr. Spock, we're ready.
For what?
The service is for Latimer.
Mr. Bowman, we're working against time.
The man's dead. He deserves a decent burial. You hear the captain a few words.
Doctor, perhaps you know the correct words for such an occasion.
Mr. Spock... That's your place.
My place is here. If you please, Doctor.
Now look, we may all die here. At least let us die like men, not machines.
By dealing with first things first, I hope to increase our chances of staying alive.
McCoy and Spock lock eyes.
Well, Mr. Scott.
If you'll give me a hand with this conduit.
Spock turns back to Scotty. Bowman looks at him scornfully and goes.
The pressure's dropping. We're losing everything.
What happened?
One of the lines gave. The strain are coming through the atmosphere and the added load, and we tried to bypass.
He checks.
Yeah, that's done it. We have no fuel.
Well, it would seem to solve the problem of who to leave behind. Consider the alternatives, Mr. Scott.
We have no fuel. What alternatives?
Mr. Scott, there are always alternatives.
Mr. Spock! Something's happening outside.
Spock jumps out of the shuttle, followed by McCoy and Mears, all armed with phasers. Gaetano and Bowman are crouched behind a boulder a few yards from the shuttle, phasers drawn, listening.
What do those super-sensitive ears make of that, Mr. Spock?
Wood. Rubbing on some kind of leather.
They're getting ready. They'll attack. Not necessarily. It could be a simple tribal rite. Assuming a tribal culture.
Not a tribal culture. Their artifacts are too primitive. More likely a loose association of some sort.
If we knew more about them, we could...
We know enough. If they're tribal, they'll have a sense of unity. And we can use that.
How, Mr. Bummer?
By hitting them hard. Give them a bloody nose, make them think twice about attacking us.
Yes, I agree. If we stand by and do nothing, we're just giving them an invitation to come down and slaughter us.
I'm frequently appalled by the low regard you Earthmen have for life.
Well, we're practical about it. Now, I say we hit them before they hit us.
Mr. Bomer?
Absolutely.
Dr. McCoy?
Seems logical to me.
It does indeed. It seems logical to me also. But to take life indiscriminately.
The majority.
I'm not interested in the opinion of the majority, Mr. Gaetano. The components must be weighed. Our dangers to ourselves as well as our duties to other life forms. Friendly or not.
He looks round at the surrounding rocks.
There's a third course.
That could get us killed.
I think not. Dr. McCoy.
Yes.
You and Yeoman Mears return to the ship. Assist Mr. Scott in any way possible. We'll be back shortly.
Right.
Gentlemen, you follow my orders. To the letter. Firing only when so instructed and at my designated targets.
Now you're talking.
You'll fire to frighten, Mr. Gaetano, not to kill.
Gaetano comes up to him.
Oh, for the... You saw what they did to Latimer?
I am in command, Mr. Gaetano. The orders and the responsibility will be mine. Follow me.
Spock leads the way through the maze of rocks with Bomer and Gaetano following. The atmosphere is heavy with mist, and visibility is down to a few yards. From up above in the rocks, a shadowy figure waits with a huge spear poised. Spock leads the party on. All three have their phasers drawn and glance uncertainly at the inhospitable terrain. The ground at their feet is a river of pale mist. An enormous spear suddenly crashes down on the path in front of them. Spock fires up at the crags. The attacker throws down a huge leather and wood shield. Spock crouches by the shield, examining it briefly. Then he, Bomer, and Gaetano move forward warily.
Mists, I can't see them.
I hear them. Directly ahead of us. Several, I believe. Now direct your phasers to 2 o'clock and to 10 o'clock.
I say we hit them dead on.
Yes, I know, but fortunately I'm giving orders. Take aim, please, and fire when I give a signal.
With the two men aiming their phasers off to the side, Spock climbs a rock face for a better view.
Fire!
Bomer and Gaetano fire into the sides of the gulch.
Cease fire!
Spock scrambles back down to the other two.
I should think twice before bothering us again.
I still say we should have killed them.
It was not necessary. Fear will do for us what needs to be done. Mr. Bomer, you return with me to the Galileo. Mr. Gaetano, you remain on guard here, keeping contact with the ship.
Gaetano stares at Spock unhappily. Bomer gives him a reassuring squeeze on the shoulder before following Spock back to the shuttle. Gaetano crouches down, unnerved. Phaser at the ready.
Did you find them?
Yes, we found them. They won't bother us again.
I hope not. Scotty has an idea.
It's dangerous, but it might work.
Go, Mr. Scott.
I can adjust the main reactor to function with a substitute fuel supply.
It's all very well, but we don't have a substitute supply.
Aye, we do. Our phasers. I can adapt them and use their energy. It'll take time, but it's possible.
Trouble is, they happen to be our only defense.
They would also seem to be our only hope.
Aye.
McCoy, Mears, and Scotty look at Spock. He purses his lips and nods.
Yeoman, your phaser.
But what if the creatures attack again?
They won't attack for at least several hours. By then, with luck, we'll be gone.
If I can get a full load, we should be able to achieve orbit with all hands. Not that we can maintain it long.
We don't have to maintain it very long, Mr. Scott. In less than 24 hours, the Enterprise will be forced to abandon its search in order to make a rendezvous. If we can't maintain orbit after that time, it won't make any difference. If we burn up in a decaying orbit or die here on the planet's surface, we shall surely die. Doctor, your phaser.
McCoy looks up at Spock dubiously for a moment, but hands over his weapon.
Better work, Mr. Scott.
Aye, aye, sir.
Scotty opens the access hatch in the floor of the vehicle and starts making the modifications. On board the Enterprise, in the transporter room, six containers of various sizes materialize on the six pads in the transportation chamber. Kirk comes in.
They came back all right, sir. In my opinion, the transporters are now safe for human transport.
Good. This is the captain. Landing parties 1, 2, and 3, report to transporter room for immediate beaming down to surface of the planet. Ordnance condition 1A.
Captain, it's a big planet. It'll be sheer luck if our landing parties find anything.
I'm depending on luck, Lieutenant. It's almost the only tool we have that'll work now.
He goes. On the planet's surface, Gaetano, alone at the foot of the gulch where the creatures were last seen, scrambles behind a boulder, terrified. A large rock knocks the phaser from his hand. Nursing his wrist, he lunges at the fallen weapon, but a huge spear crashes down beside him. Taking fright, he tries to climb the steep, rocky cliff at his back. He slips back down, turns and stares helplessly as one of the giant furry creatures lumbers inexorably towards him. Gaetano cowers as the creature raises its arms and lunges. Spock, Boehmer, and McCoy examine the ground where Gaetano was last seen. While Boehmer crouches down to look at the footprints, Spock picks up the abandoned phaser pistol and hands it to McCoy.
Take this back to Mr. Scott for conversion, please, Doctor.
Nobody knows what's happened to Gaetano. And you hand over his phaser like nothing's happened at all.
And give this to Mr. Scott in the event I don't return. Just where are you going?
I have a certain scientific curiosity about what's become of Mr. Gaetano. Return to the ship, please.
Spock, unarmed, having given his phaser to McCoy as well, walks off through the rocks.
I don't know. He'll risk his neck locating Gaetano. And then if he finds him, he's just as liable to order him to stay behind. You tell me.
Do you really think the ship will ever leave?
Well, it won't unless we get these phasers back.
McCoy and Boehmer return. Alone, Spock makes his way through the rocky landscape. Thick mist swirls around his ankles. Ahead of him, he sees Gaetano's body lying on its back on top of a boulder, apparently unmarked. He goes over and stands, hands on hips, looking down at it. Spock seizes Gaetano's wrist, pulls the body up over his shoulder, and starts back the way he came. As he squeezes through a narrow gap between two large boulders, one of the native creature's large spears clatters into the rocks close by. Spock turns and looks back through the mist at his pursuers. More spears fly towards him. He ignores them and carries on back towards the shuttle. McCoy and Boehmer open the shuttle door and help carry Gaetano's body inside. Safe in the shuttle with the door closed, Spock casts a quick glance at Scotty, still flat on his stomach, working deep inside the recess beneath the floor. Spock sits, gazing ahead with a brooding expression. As Scotty begins draining the power from another phaser pistol, McCoy comes and kneels beside him and glares over at Spock.
Well, Mr. Spock, they didn't stay frightened very long, did they?
Most illogical reaction. When we demonstrated our superior weapons, they should have fled.
You mean they should have respected us?
Of course.
Mr. Spock, respect is a rational process. Did it ever occur to you they might react emotionally? With anger?
Doctor, I'm not responsible for their unpredictability.
They were perfectly predictable. To anyone with feeling. You might as well admit it, Mr. Spock. Your precious logic brought them down on us.
Why haven't they done anything?
They're studying us. For the moment.
Another prediction, Mr. Spock?
My opinion, Mr. Bulmer.
One of the creatures pounds a huge rock on the shuttle's roof.
Seal the windows!
Studying us, Mr. Spock. They seem to learn rather quickly. All right, Spock, you have all the answers. What now?
Mr. Bulmer, your tone is increasingly hostile.
My tone is the only thing that's hostile, Mr. Spock.
Curious. Most illogical.
And I'm sick and tired of your logic.
We could use a little inspiration.
Strange. Step by step, I have made the correct and logical decisions. And yet two men have died.
The shuttle jolts again.
And you've brought our furry friends down on us.
Yes, I do seem to have miscalculated regarding them. And inculcated resentment on your parts. The sum of the parts cannot be greater than the whole.
But a little less analysis and more action. That's what we need, Mr. Spock.
How much longer, Mr. Scott?
Another hour, maybe two.
Won't be long enough.
Doctor, a phaser can only drain so fast.
The creature slams the rock onto the shuttle roof.
How long do you think those plates will hold out under this? We've got to do something.
You got your hands full.
Spock looks up at the roof of the craft. The vehicle rocks again.
Captain's log, stardate 2823.1. Our landing parties are on the surface of Taurus 2, and we continue to hope. Instruments are only slowly returning to an operable condition as the ion storm slowly disperses. On the ship, we can only wait helplessly.
The commissioner comes onto the bridge.
What word from the sensor section?
That last report, they were getting some readings.
I'm not interested in the last report. I want to know now.
Yes, sir.
You have 2 hours and 43 minutes, Captain.
I'm perfectly aware of how much time I have left.
I am delighted, however, I shall continue to remind you.
You do that.
Sir, sensor section reporting. Static interference, still creating false images. Estimates 80% undependable.
What about radio communication?
Clearing slowly. Still incapable of transmission or reception.
What do you intend to do?
Do? I intend to continue the search, foot by foot, inch by inch, by candlelight if necessary, until the last possible moment. And if you keep your nose off my bridge, I'd be thankful.
I'm sure the authorities will be pleased by your diligence, Captain. I'm not so sure they'll appreciate the way you address a high commissioner.
I'm in command here, Mr. Ferris.
You are, Captain. For another 2 hours and 42 minutes.
He leaves the bridge. Kirk seethes. On the planet's surface, the creatures continue to attack.
Mr. Scott, how much power do we have left in the ship's batteries?
Well, they're in good shape, but they won't lift us off if that's what you're getting at.
Will they electrify the exterior of this ship?
That they will, Mr.
Right,
Small.
Go. Get to the center of the ship. Don't touch the plates. Be sure you're insulated.
Everyone moves away from the walls as Scotty exposes the battery terminals.
Stand by. Are you ready, Scott?
Ready, Mr. Spock.
All right, go.
Scotty earths the batteries against the hull.
Again!
Beyond the cabin windows, sparks flash. Scotty squats beside Spock.
I can't use any more. Not to be sure of the ignition.
I believe we've used enough, Mr. Scott. I suggest you continue draining the phasers.
It must have worked.
For the moment.
For the moment?
The moment they discover they're not seriously hurt, they'll be back. Meanwhile, please check the aft compartment. See if there's anything else you can unload to lighten the ship.
Mr. Gaetano's body is back there.
It will, of course, have to be left behind.
Not without a burial.
I wouldn't recommend it. The creatures won't be far away.
Not without a burial, Mr. Spock.
It would expose members of this crew to unnecessary peril.
I'll take that chance. You see, Mr. Spock, I would insist upon a decent burial, even if your body was back there.
Mr. Bulmer.
Well, I'm sick and tired of this machine.
That's enough.
Gentlemen. All right, Mr. Bulmer, you'll have your burial, provided the creatures will permit it.
Bulmer nods. Spock goes to the front of the craft and looks through the windows for any sign of movement outside. Scotty puts the cover back on the batteries. On the Enterprise, Uhura spins round from her desk.
Captain Kirk, landing party number 2 has been beamed back aboard ship. They have casualties. 1 dead, 2 injured.
Put Lieutenant Kellowitz on visual.
Kellowitz, Captain.
The report.
We were attacked, Captain. Huge furry creatures. I checked with Astral Anthropology and their order 480G, anthropoid. Similar life forms discovered on Hansen's planet, but much larger. 10, 12 feet in height.
Your casualties?
Well, Ensign O'Neill got a spear through the body before we even knew they were around. Lieutenant Imamura has a dislocated shoulder and severe lacerations, but he'll make it all right. Captain, the creatures are all over the place. If the Galileo is down on that planet, I...
Thank you, Lieutenant. You better report to sick bay yourself.
Aye, Captain.
Half face of the bridge, Nick.
Captain Kirk. Standing by. No weapons. Check your chronometer. You'll see it is 2823.8. Your time is up.
But they're still out there.
So are the plague victims on New Paris. I'm sorry, Captain. I now assume authority granted me under Title 15 Galactic Emergency Procedures. And I order you to abandon search.
But Columbus hasn't returned yet. I still have 2 search parties out.
You're procrastinating, Captain. You have your orders. Recall your search parties and proceed to Marcus 3 immediately.
Kirk goes to the captain's chair.
Lieutenant.
Yes, sir?
Order the transporter room to immediately beam up the 2 search parties from the surface. Attempt to contact the Columbus.
I'm in partial contact with the mouse, sir.
Then have them return immediately. Mr. Sulu? Prepare to abandon search. Set course for Marcus 3.
Sulu and the navigator look back at Kirk unhappily.
Captain's log supplement. The search parties have returned to the ship, and the Columbus is on its way back. I have been compelled to abandon the search.
Captain, sensor section says the beams are working again.
What about the other systems?
No, sir. Too much interference.
Captain, course set for Magus 3.
Stand ready, Mr. Sulu. How long before the Columbus comes on board?
23 minutes, sir.
23 minutes.
Kirk takes a despairing breath. On board the shuttle, Yeoman Mears tries the radio. Scotty is still working frantically.
Enterprise, this is Galileo. Come in, please. Enterprise. Nothing, sir. Just ionic interference.
That's it.
How about weight?
If we shed every ounce, we might be able to achieve orbit.
And how long can we hold it?
A few hours, no longer. But if we time it right, we can cut out of orbit and save enough fuel for a controlled re-entry.
To land here again. Not a very attractive possibility.
We have very few alternatives, Mr. Spock.
Spock opens the shuttle door and looks out.
Dr. McCoy, Mr. Bomer. When can we lift off, Scott?
Maybe 8 minutes, if the weight's right.
Gentlemen, ship will lift off in exactly 10 minutes. You have that long to bury Mr. Gaetano. Now it appears to be clear outside, at least for the moment. I'll assist you. Hurry.
They move aft to fetch the body. On the Enterprise, the shuttle Columbus noses its way into the enormous hangar and touches down. The hangar doors close behind it.
The Columbus is aboard, sir. The flight hatch is closed. Transporter room reports last of the landing parties have beamed safely up. All systems report secured for warp factors.
Mr. Sulu, proceed on course for Marcus 3. At space normal speed.
Space normal speed?
Those are my orders. Lieutenant Uhura, order all sensor sections to direct beams aft. Full function, continuous operation until further orders.
Yes, sir.
The creatures attack.
Here's the ship! Immediate liftoff!
Spock is hit by a huge rock and his foot becomes trapped.
No, go back! Lift off! Go back!
Go! They free Spock.
All right, go! Go! Go!
The 3 men race for the ship, with Spock limping badly.
Go, Scott! I told you to lift off.
Don't be a fool, Mr. Spock. We couldn't leave you out there.
Get us off, Scott. We should be moving, but we're not.
Quite right, Mr. Scott. They seem to be holding us down.
All systems are go, but we're not moving.
What are you doing?
Our boosters.
We'll never be able to hold orbit.
Would you rather stay here?
No, Mr. Spock.
Spock takes the controls.
We're moving!
Let it go!
We fell off.
Everybody
mind you, we have yet to achieve orbit, nor can we maintain it long. An hour from now, we may be right back where we started from.
The small, boxy shuttlecraft rises through the planet's thinning atmosphere, moving towards orbit.
Gentlemen, by coming after me, you may well have destroyed what slim chance you had for your survival. The logical thing for you to have done was to have left me behind.
Mr. Spock, remind me to tell you that I'm sick and tired of your logic.
That is a most illogical attitude. Orbit in 1 minute, Mr. Scott. Fuel status?
15 pounds PSI. Approximately enough for one orbit, sir.
After that?
Tapping our boosters ended our last chance for a soft landing.
You mean a burn-up?
That is the usual end of a decaying orbit.
I don't want to die up here.
Infinitely preferable to the kind of death we'd be granted on the planet's surface, I should think.
I admire your ability to make so measured a choice.
Mr. Spock, you said a while ago that there were always alternatives.
Did I? I may have been mistaken.
Well, at least I've lived long enough to hear that. Is there anything we can do?
The Enterprise is surely on course for Marcus 3 by now. I, for one, do not believe in angels.
Well, Mr. Spock, so ends your first command.
Yes. My first command.
Orbit attitude, Mr. Spock. With our present fuel, that gives us about 45 minutes.
Spock runs a hand thoughtfully over his mouth, then reaches for the radio transmitter.
Galileo to Enterprise. Galileo to Enterprise, come in, please. Galileo to Enterprise, come in, please.
Again, Spock runs his hand over his mouth. He looks at the controls in front of him, leans forward, and hits the fuel jettison button, then fires up the engines, igniting the dumped fuel. Scotty leaps up in alarm.
Mr. Spock!
The shuttle lurches forward, leaving a huge trail of burning fuel in its wake.
What happened?
He jettisoned the fuel and ignited it.
We need that fuel to maintain orbit. Are you out of your mind?
Perhaps, Mr. Bowman.
How long have we got now, Scotty?
Well, the orbit will start decaying as soon as the fuel's exhausted. Say 6 minutes.
On board the Enterprise, the navigator checks his settings. At the helm, Sulu suddenly looks up at the large view screen, which is looking back at the planet they've just left.
Forward scanner to bridge. Status report. Section on alert. Status.
Captain, something there on the screen. Taurus 2.
A yellow streak is moving in orbit around the planet.
Sensors. A meteorite? No, it's holding a lateral line. There it is again. Holding steady, Captain. 180 degrees about, Mr. Sulu. Lieutenant Uhura, contact transporter room. All beams ready. Full normal speed.
Above the planet, the shuttle continues in orbit, trailing a flame of red and blue vapor. In the cabin, Scotty looks at Spock with slowly dawning understanding.
A distress signal?
He grins.
It's like sending up a flare. Mr. Spock, that was a good gamble. Perhaps it was worth it.
No one out there to see it.
The fuel flare trails out and dies.
Orbit decaying, Mr. Spock. 10 seconds to atmosphere.
It may be the last action you'll ever take, Mr. Spock. But it was all you.
Totally illogical. There was no chance.
That's exactly what I mean.
The shuttle starts to buffet and overheat as it hits the planet's outer atmosphere. The cabin fills with smoke.
It's getting hot.
Boma coughs and chokes as the fumes start to overpower him. McCoy puts a hand to his mouth. Scotty gazes ahead stoically.
Is locked in, sir.
Activate beams.
On the shuttle, the bodies of the five surviving crew start to sparkle and dematerialize.
Whatever it was, Captain, it just burned up in the atmosphere.
Kirk slumps back in his seat.
Captain, transporter room just beamed up 5 persons.
She puts a hand to her earpiece.
Alive and well.
Although his grim expression hardly alters, it's some time before Kirk can compose himself sufficiently to give an order. He straightens up in his seat.
Mr. Sulu, proceed on course to Marcus 3. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Aye, sir.
Back on the bridge, Spock confers with Scotty at the engineering console. McCoy leans into Kirk in the captain's chair, talking quietly into his ear. Kirk goes over to Spock.
Mr. Spock.
Captain.
There's really something I don't understand about all this, and maybe you can explain it to me. Logically, of course. When you jettisoned the fuel and you ignited it, you knew that there was virtually no chance of it being seen, and yet you did it anyhow. And that would seem to me to be an act of desperation.
Quite correct, Captain.
Now, we all know, and I'm sure the doctor will agree with me, that desperation is a highly emotional state of mind. How does your well-known logic explain that?
Quite simply, Captain. I examined the problem from all angles, and it was plainly hopeless. Logic informed me that, under the circumstances, the only possible action would have to be one of desperation. Logical decision, logically arrived at.
I see. You mean you reasoned that it was time for an emotional outburst?
Spock frowns.
Well, I wouldn't put it in exactly those terms, Captain, but those are essentially the facts.
Kirk puts a hand on Spock's shoulder.
You're not going to admit that for the first time in your life, you committed a purely human emotional act?
No, sir.
Kirk looks at McCoy and Uhura and chuckles.
Mr. Spock, you're a stubborn man.
Yes, sir.
Kirk goes back to the captain's chair. Spock folds his arms and puts on an indifferent expression as everyone on the bridge has a laugh at his expense. This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.